Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
All right, this is Frank on Target with True Crime in the Low Country, featuring Crime and Cask, that's Jim Cask, and the illustrious Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News. And we're here on WVFF Radio, 97.7 FM in Cottageville, South Carolina.
Sure. The book is called Because Enough is Enough. It's a tell-all book about how Juror 785 was wrongly removed as the Egg Lady. If you remember, she was removed by Judge Newman on the day they were going to go deliberate. And, you know, she was, as Newman said, listen, to all intents, as you've been a great juror, but, you know, there's like too much smoke here. And we're going to have to replace you. And what the book is really about and dives into, 785 is the author. These are her words. These are her experiences. I wrote them for. But she believes, and we present evidence within the book, that it was a conspiracy or a scheme to have her removed from the jury. Why? Because people thought that either A, she didn't know what she was going to vote for, and therefore I need a guilty verdict, or they thought she was going to vote not guilty, and again, they needed a guilty verdict. So it really dives into that. It really is a tell-all book. It's evidence-based, backs everything up. It also gives her opinion on a lot of things. It's a good read. It's a couple hundred pages, but it goes in from opening statements to witnesses like David Owen to Nathan Tibbs to, you know, really everything. And the Murdaugh, when he got up there, and that really is important because when Alec gets up on the stand, when he alleges that Becky Hill really started to talk and get involved as far as, you know.
Did Becky Hill feel threatened by how persuasive Alec Murdaugh was on the stand?
Well, she did tell the jurors, according to the jurors, and both jurors, Juror Z and 785, you know, don't believe what the prosecution is telling you. Watch their body language. These are things that shouldn't be said by someone who works for the state of South Carolina during the trial. He has already put her face out there. Tomorrow she will put her name out there. And as well as Juror Z, but she's already said her name. Her name is Mandy Pierce.
Juror Z is the juror who told Judge Toll that she was persuaded that Rebecca Hill had contact with her, yes, that was of and concerning matters that the jury was deliberating about, and that should have been a reason right there for Toll to have granted a new trial to Alec Murdaugh.
If you remember during the trial, in fact, it was in opening statements where Creighton Waters got up, and he pulled his cell phone out. And he says, I want you to look at this. And this is a cell phone. Everybody has one. Everybody has one in their pocket. And they tell more than just what is, you know, you're texting somebody. They say more than this. And we will show you beyond a reasonable doubt that this will prove things that Alec Murdaugh did that he's lying about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So what about Maggie's phone? So what we know about Maggie's phone is that it stopped entirely. She was on it. They were heavy users, as they said, Paul, Maggie, the whole family, heavy users of the cell phone. Hers stopped at 8:49:31 seconds on June 7th, 2021.
Oh, stopped means what? The activity on the phone stopped?
Complete activity on the phone, user activity on the phone.
There's certain data that was still recorded, but she stopped using it.
All right.
At 8:49:31.
Okay.
Really important time. Okay, so
Paul had stopped using his, 30 seconds prior.
Yeah.
So they're saying, listen, based off using their phones, they were heavy users. That's when they believed that they were
killed.
They were killed. Okay. So then they go back and we start talking about what? We start talking about Alex's phone. And the movements of Alex's phone. If you remember during the trial, they started talking a lot about his phone woke up, right? It woke up at like 9:02. And all of a sudden, Alex is walking around, and he's walking around, according to the prosecution, frantically, because he's taking more steps and faster steps than he had all day long. You remember those?
Yes. Those,
yeah. Yes. They're, and I say, well, here's where he's walking, and this is his walking per steps. And, you know, so they were trying to lay the groundwork of that at 9:02, he was in a hurry. Well, he was in a hurry. He wanted to get dressed, get over to his mom's house, and get back home. But his phone starts moving at 9:02. So here's the problem. Now he's going to go. He's decided. He's gotten back, taking a chicken out of Bubba's mouth. He's either walked Maggie or drove Maggie over to the hangar. He's driven back to the house. He sat down, whatever it was, time, he sat there, and at 9:02, he decides, you know what, I'm going to go to my mom's house. He grabs his phone, he starts walking around. So he's trying to do what when he leaves? What do you do when you leave and your husband or wife is at home? And you, and they're not around. You know, I'll text my wife, or I'll call.
Well, I'm fussing with, you know, what I'm taking the car with me, and what I'm doing, and am I still, you know, sometimes I bring a cup of coffee with me, so I'm playing with that, or maybe I'm still brushing my hair, or chewing a pack of gum, or doing something, but I'm screwing around doing stuff before I get in the car. So my phone would be, I'm probably not talking on the phone, but it could be, but it's moving. It's, if it's with me, it's moving around, and it certainly would be recording my steps as moving around. But there's a lot of, if somebody tracked what I did, there'd be a lot of frantic. I'm sure that somebody viewing it from the outside later would say, well, what the hell was she doing? And I do a lot of this. I forgot it, have to run back in the house and whatever. So me getting out the door into a car to get on the road is always a sort of a more complicated process than it would seem. It's because, you know, I got to remember, did I turn off the air? Did I turn on this? Did I turn on the light? Whatever. So I'm assuming that Alec was doing stuff like that. Is that kind of true?
Yeah, he went and got himself a spit cup, he said. He went to the bathroom. You know, I was sure he was charging his phone in his bedroom, which is where I charge my phone. Goes to, picks his phone up, starts walking around, and leaves the house. But he starts making some calls. So he called Maggie first at 9:04:32. He called her, and she didn't answer. So that's at 9:04:45. And he waits about another 30 seconds, decides he's going to call his dad. And that was for about 18 seconds. Nothing happens. But here's the important thing. At Maggie's phone, let's go back a little bit. I'm going to jump back. I'm going to do a Quentin Tarantino on you guys. We're going to jump back because Maggie's phone starts walking at 8:53. According to the prosecution, they were killed at 8:49, somewhere around 8:49:31 and some change, right?
Okay.
So at 8:53 in 15 seconds, her phone starts to move. Now, if it's Alex, as the prosecution alleges, if it's Alex, this time during the day, which they do not mention and they do not talk about the steps at all during the trial, those 59 steps are the slowest step per second out of a whole day. Now, you would ask yourself, hey, listen, it's 8:53. 4 minutes ago, I just killed my wife and son. At that point, wouldn't you think that I would be walking frantically around with her phone? And honestly, Alex knew her passcode. So if he really wanted to know what was going on in her phone, he'd have opened her phone. But the phone did a lot of different things. Once you stop as the user and the phone's locked and it was a facial recognition, it also had a passcode. it just stopped. And so it started moving again at 8:53. And during that time, her phone did try to recognize the person. So someone was looking at that phone. And, of course, it wasn't Maggie, so it didn't open the phone. But what a phone will do as you move it around from an orientation change to, let's say, a horizontal, you know, or back to portrait, and slowly that phone moved 59 steps. And 59 steps, and this is important, because 59 steps by a human is about 150 feet. I've done the math. I've looked it up. I've cross-referenced it. It's 150 feet. So her phone moved 150 feet. Now, when you're down by the dog kennels and where Maggie was found, which is over by that doghouse, remember we talked about that last week?
Yeah.
Yeah. So where she laid, her phone was picked up. And if you look at 150th direction, the only place that really makes sense is on the other side of the hangar. And if you walk 59 steps or 150 feet, it literally, I mean literally, 59 steps ends on the back side of the hangar where the gravel road goes around the back side of the hangar and ends. Now, why is that important? Why is that important? That's important because if you recall, Sheriff Green, who came in with his body cam, and he was the first sheriff on the scene, stood and talked to Alex with his flashlight and was like, there's tire tracks over here in the grass.
Yes, 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 he did.
What are these tire tracks? Are these you? And Alex was very matter-of-fact. He looked at it, he's like, no, I came from that way. And when Alex said, I came from that way, what he meant was the house was that way. So he came from the house. He's not gonna leave the house, go out the main gate, go out Moselle Road, go back down and come into the back entrance. They had a little, you know, path or whatever from the house down to the dog kennel. So it was very matter of fact. Absolutely.
It's pointing to the killers, the real killers.
The real killers.
Not that Alex was a shooter at all. It's
Okay. Well,
yeah, sure. And that's why not getting impressions of those tires or even of the footprints, not preserving that evidence, because it was raining, and Alec pointed it out, and Green had noticed it, and law enforcement did nothing to preserve that evidence of other people on the property at the time of the murders. And it's outrageous that we don't know, because all of that was lost because of the rain that night, and none of it was preserved. And there are ways, they could have even photographed it. They could have gotten impressions of it. There are ways to preserve that evidence, and they didn't try to. Yeah, keep going.
Another sheriff, Captain Chapman, by the way, his brother was on the jury. That makes a whole lot of sense to nobody.
Right.
Captain Chapman also confirmed on the stand that he saw the same tire tracks.
Yes.
He also said that he didn't take a picture of them. Everybody has a phone in their pocket. Just take a picture. No one did. And then there was a fire chief from, I believe, Colleton or Hampton, one of the two. Probably Colleton, and he noticed them as well. So you have three officials that noticed these tire tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the tire tracks do, according to Captain Chapman and the fire chief? It appeared that they came off of the gravel road and turned around and moved back onto the gravel road. And what would that tell you?
It was a car that had come, parked, and then later on turned to leave the property.
Yeah, they came back up. They came into the backside to go pick up their friend who was sitting on the same spot where 59 steps ended.
Because he was there to drop off a bunch of drugs, which Alec had picked up. Anyway, so let's keep going. So we already talked about this.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, now, there's a bit of speculation here, but there's some things that are not speculative. So keep going. Because get back to talking about these steps. Because if Maggie's phone is moving, if Alec is supposedly in possession of Maggie's phone, and her phone is moving one way, and Alex's phone, being held by the same person at the same time, is recording entirely different movements, it leads me to believe that Alec was, in fact, not holding her phone, but somebody else was, like the real killers, who took it from the property, looked at it, wondered about it. Keep going, Jim, because I think you've done a lot of... I think you explained this better than the prosecution ever did, and certainly even better than the defense. I don't recall Jim mentioning this in his closing at all. But keep going.
So think about this. And And now you have to just jump for a second to Alex. If I'm Alex and I just killed my wife and son, what in the hell? I have got, and I'm leaving at 9:07. I am leaving. My body is going to be clean at 9:07. I'm in my truck and I'm heading out to my mom's. Okay. So you would think at 8:53 to 8:55, yeah, I'm not going to be sitting around slowly walking with my wife's phone, trying to see what it's doing, moving it from vertical to sideways, while I'm walking slowly with it for 59 steps for over 2 minutes, by the way. This is precious time that you have to clean up, get rid of guns, do all kinds of things that the prosecution just never talked about, ever. There's a lot of things in a Juror 785's book. There's a lot of things that the prosecution says. And she also says there's a lot of things they didn't say. And you have to go back and look at this testimony and look at the evidence.
They knew right then they were going to convict.
The prosecution work for us. They work for the people. And their goal is not to target somebody and make sure they can selectively use only the evidence that's proof of his presumed guilt. They're supposed to be seeking the truth because they work for us. So during the investigation phase, the prosecution should absolutely have been putting these facts together along with the hematrace.
They're not going to, what do you call it?
I agree. At trial, I don't know where the defense was. And you know what happened with that testimony? It went on too long and it got too tedious. And so you just got numb about what's the point? What are they trying to say? And the defense did not do a good enough job wrapping it up with a bow to say, here's what's weak about their case. Jim, you right now are doing a better job explaining that it couldn't happen, and you're not done, and I know that you've got more to say, but you're explaining it better than the defense did. And I think that is really, really deficient of them. It's cause for concern for me that they didn't put this together very well.
And I agree with you. I don't. They completely missed this one.
Keep going. Yeah. So Alec is just taking his own sweet, if you believe the prosecution. He's just killed Paul and Maggie. He's got to be covered in blood. And yet he's just taking 2 minutes to walk slowly around with Maggie's phone, a phone that he has. He knows what's on it. He has no reason to be concerned about it whatsoever. He has no reason to look twice at it. As a matter of fact, he has no reason to move it at all.
Right.
There's no reason for Alec to move that phone, but keep going.
But if you're the killers and you see that she's dead, now she's got her phone in her hand, what the hell is she? Was she live on Facebook? Did she call 911? Did she call Alec? I mean, who does she call? So now we're like, here's my hypothesis of what happened. They died somewhere around 8:49:31 and some change. Paul first, Maggie second. Maggie surprised us. Okay.
Yes.
Now, if you're the killers, one of them's probably laying on the ground that just killed Paul because he fell back over onto the sidewalk.
But his phone, he's on top of his phone, so they're not worried about his phone.
Yeah, right. His phone is in his back pocket, Paul's back pocket.
Okay.
And then the other one just shot Maggie, and now they're all looking at each other like, what in the heck just happened? Oh, my God. Now you have to wait about 2 minutes to see if headlights from that main house. Did Alec hear all that? Is he coming out? Is he coming down?
Yes.
So you're about 8:50 right now, so you don't do anything for 3 minutes. You sit there. You're either yelling at each other, you're talking about what the hell just happened or whatever. And all of a sudden, it's like, we got to get out of here. He's not coming. But one of you is covered in blood.
You don't know what Maggie recorded. Paul didn't have time to record. You killed Paul, but you knew that the phone wasn't in his hand. He wasn't recording it. It was in his back pocket. Maggie, you're not sure what she recorded because you killed her second. She came running. And she may have been saying something in addition to running, and so they're probably terrified about what is on her phone. Okay, so keep going.
I've been up and down Moselle Road, and there's one spot on Moselle Road. It's close to Cross Swamp Road. There's one spot that you can drive into and go behind a tree line that no one will see your vehicle. That's the only place on Moselle Road that actually happens. It's easy to drive into.
Right. What kind of trees? Jim, what kind of trees? Was this true on June 7th of 2021? Or are these fast-growing trees that in the last 3 years have grown up and they're bigger than we thought?
No. No. This is a big tree line.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm with you.
Covered in brush. So now you're sitting there and you're like, I'm covered in blood. I can't go because God forbid we walk together on this road to go back to the truck to get out of here. And a sheriff drives behind. What happened to you? Not to mention the fact you're carrying the guns. So I'm going to sit here with her phone and the guns. You go get the vehicle. Now That is about an 8 to 9 minute walk. I don't care. Even if you're going to run, but you're not going to be dressed in camo or whatever they were dressed in, and running down the side of the road. So it takes about 8 to 9 minutes, and then it takes 1 minute from where the truck was to drive back. So now you've got approximately 10 minutes. In that time frame, her phone does those orientation changes. It takes a snapshot of the phone takes a snapshot of an open app, which was Facebook, which really means nothing. But her phone is diddling around until about 9:03 when it kind of goes dead, and then it wakes back up again at 9:04:45. Now, why is 9:05:44? Why is that important? Because that is roughly 10 minutes from the time that the phone starts walking. And what I said, yeah, it took about 10 minutes for the guy to walk down there, get his truck, and come back. So right. What happens at 9:05:44? The truck comes back to pick up his buddy. So he picks up her phone, right? He picks up her phone, and they get into the truck. Now they take off. Now, this is important because this is now when Alec is now outside and he calls Maggie's phone. Okay? Mm-hmm. He calls Maggie's phone at 9:06:14. And if you recall, during the trial, Alec said, I was outside and I was calling Maggie. And he goes, I first called her and I thought, oh, I hear them coming up. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes. I also remember him talking about an animal or something that was out there in the yard that might have run by.
Yep.
Well, anyway, keep going with this. Yeah, well, okay.
So he calls her, and he thought they were coming up, so he hangs up. But when he called her, and he's taking steps, and sled agent got on the stand and said, yes, he was outside, GPS confirms it, his iPhone says he was taking steps, he calls Maggie Murdoch, and her phone, when he calls, her phone makes an implement change at 9:06:12. According to the timeline, the prosecution, which could be wrong, but it was 9:06:14 when Alex called her. He said, they say 2 seconds apart, okay? But I know as well as you do, sometimes you call somebody and you answer it before. They're like, I didn't even hear it ring. So yes, these type of things happen. You're 2 seconds off. It really doesn't matter. But what's important about this is, and the sled agent testified this, was that Alec is moving. He's walking towards his Suburban. He's outside and he's recording steps. Please, somebody out there in the land of whatever, tell me how Maggie Murdaugh's phone is making implement changes from orientation to portrait, right? Who's calling me? And it does not record steps, even though her phone was just recording steps not more than minutes ago. Her phone recorded steps all day long.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.